Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First up on today's show, we're going to hear the remarkable story of a woman who lived through stage 4 cancer. It's a great feeling, folks. Hope you enjoy it.
I'm Wells here with...
My name is Karen Barr.
She's going to be telling us a little bit about her story of having a brain injury and overcoming and just where it's taken her in life. So tell me a little bit about your story.
Well, back in October 3rd of 2014, I was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer, which turned into stage 4 breast cancer. And I went through very heavy chemo. I had a double mastectomy and radiation for 25 days. 6 weeks later, after the radiation was finished, I was allowed to travel, and I wanted to go to my son's wedding in Alberta, and my doctor said okay, so we got ready to go. And at the last minute, I asked my youngest son, Craig Barr, to join us. I don't know why, I don't understand why, I just felt that I had to ask him. He agreed, and we traveled out there. From then on, I have no memory of anything, just what I've been told. But I drove out to Alberta with my family, except my husband and two other of my boys. I have 5 boys, and I don't remember the trip, any of the trip. I don't remember the wedding. But the wedding was on August 1st, and the day after, around about 5 o'clock, my son Craig came in to check on me because I wasn't up yet, and that's not like me. And he came in and found me barely breathing, and my eyes were open, so he didn't know what to do, so he went and got somebody else. They called an ambulance. I had a cardiac arrest in the ambulance and was coded. I coded in the ambulance, and then they timed my death before I got to the hospital. When I got to the hospital, they put all kinds of machines and stuff on me, intubated me and stuff like that, but they couldn't get oxygen into me quick enough. It was a small hospital in Claire's Home in Alberta, so they put me in a medical induced coma and life support, and sent me to Alberta Health, the new hospital in Alberta, in Calgary, I believe. So I got there, and my family was with me. The doctors came out and told them there's nothing I could do, that I'd been without oxygen to my brain for too long, and that I would be a vegetable for the rest of my life if I was to come back. So there was nobody there that could actually make the decision to shut down my life support system. They had to call my husband, who was still here in Windsor. So they called him, and it took him 2 days to get out there. When the plane landed in Alberta, the pilot came on into the plane and asked for Gord Bar, and he put his hand up. He says, we just received a phone call from Alberta Health Services in Calgary that your wife is alive. And he didn't have a phone, so people were giving him phones, lots of phones. And when he got there, I'd gone back into my coma for 2 more days. And then when I woke up, I looked outside and I saw mountains. And I'd want to see mountains all my life, wanted to see them. And when I saw them, I thought I was in heaven, because that's all I saw was the mountains. And I thought, I'm here. And then I remember the nurses coming and saying that I was in Alberta. I says, no, I'm not in Alberta, I'm in heaven. I said, I didn't come to Alberta. So my husband came, I didn't know who he was. I didn't know who my family were. And the next day, I knew who my husband was. And they got me up to walk the next day. And there was this weird-looking green. It was a blue gurney that was outside of my room. And I later found out that it was a body bed that they put the bodies in to be taken to the morgue. It scared me a lot. But the church, the nurse, she brought the priest in all the time, because she called me a miracle. And they kept asking me if I'd seen the light and if I'd seen heaven.
So, what was the greatest support system that you had in your recovery? Would you say it was the church?
It was the church. It was definitely the church. My family prayed so much upon me. And the church has been part of my life ever since. I believe that my Lord brought me back for a reason. And I believe it's to give hope to other people.
If you could send any message to all the hopeless ones out there, those who still need a little faith healing, what would you say?
Trust in Jesus. Jesus, He is such a wonderful, wonderful God. And I love Him more than anything. Now, if I hadn't had Craig with me that day, I'm not sure if I would have been alive today. But it was my idea to bring him, and something told me to bring him.
So
I have that hope. It's not a hope. I have that knowledge that I know my Lord brought me back, and I know the more I pray, especially praying for others, then the Lord will help me also.
So, in your recovery, have you done anything that would be considered a miracle, an act that the doctors just can't explain?
I died.
And yet, here you are, very much alive.
Yes. But I do have problems. I suffer what they call TBI, which is traumatic brain injury.
Been there, understand that fully.
Yes. I have a lot of problems with my memory, cognitive. I'm at a grade 4 level with my learning. I have seizures. I have tremors. I have difficulty walking. A lot of problems, but I pray I pray a lot that, you know, someday maybe I can be healed, whether it be doctors. Even if it's doctors, it's the Lord that put that healing power into them.
You've already done so much more than anyone would have thought possible. So going forward, just keep the hope up.
Always, always hope. Always hope. You know, and for people that are hurting, I pray for them. I pray for all of you. You know, whether it be pain from an accident or born with a disability, anything. I pray for all of you, and I will continue doing that.
Thank you very much for taking the time out.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Karen's story really spoke to me, folks. It's very remarkable. No matter what you choose to call faith, no matter what the disability is, no matter how you came by it, doesn't matter who you are, we all have to have that belief in our tomorrow. We all have to have the understanding that our lives have purpose. That there is no one person with a disability or without who doesn't have something to contribute. I know I've said this a million times, but even a person completely paralyzed, nonverbal, they can still have an impact on someone. They smile at someone who's having a rotten day in just the right way. Might change their whole outlook. Who knows the consequences of that? But the fact is, we all need to recognize that we are not broken, that we are not something that needs to be fixed. We are people, strong, capable, intelligent people. And yes, a traumatic injury can change what life is, what it looks like, but doesn't mean it's over. Doesn't mean there's no hope for tomorrow. And faith and courage are what it takes for all of us. Whether we call ourselves believers outright, doesn't matter. That's not the salient point here. The key thing is the understanding that what we have to offer this world matters. I found it's easier for those who call themselves believers, something greater, something higher. At times, it can be the only thing standing between a person with a disability, just outright surrender. A lot of them do tend to go into this dark place of hopelessness and of pessimism, but keep your eyes on the better tomorrow. Keep your eyes on the hope that does still exist. It's there for all of us, whether we practice faith or not. A person with a disability always has something to share, even if it's just a quick word of kindness or a quick gesture of kindness. You never know the impact you have on another person. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
On Friday, August 24th, Static presents Strummer Jam Detroit 2018, a global tribute concert at PJ's Lagerhouse. This show is a celebration of the life and music of Joe Strummer for the Joe Strummer Foundation, whose mission is to provide opportunities for musicians and support to projects that create empowerment through music. Performers include Ricky Ramp Pack, Pancho Villa's Skull, and the Toss Pints, who will be playing their original music and select covers of various songs from Strummer's vast musical legacy, from the 101ers to the Clash, the Mescaleros, and his solo career. Proceeds from this event will be donated to the Joe Strummer Foundation. Find out more at joestrummerfoundation.org. Minimum suggested donation is $6 at the door. 21 and over are welcome. Doors are at 9 p.m. and the show starts at 9:30. PJ's Lagerhouse is located at 1254 Michigan Avenue in Detroit. Strummer Jam 2018, a global tribute concert at PJ's Lagerhouse.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Karen Barr, who shared her remarkable story of faith healing and survival. Our show, we'll hear from Justin LeWinter and K.C. Collier, who will be telling us a little bit about the latest happenings with Apraxia Kids. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with the Apraxia Kids.
Sure. Yeah, so we recently went through a rebranding back in March. Our organization is now known as Apraxia Kids. Prior to that, we were known as the Childhood Apraxia of Speech Association of North America, which many people highlighted as an acronym, CASANA. And we knew that as an organization that in order for us to put mission first and to really make sure people know who we are and what we do, we changed our name to Apraxia Kids. So that has been the one thing most recently that has elevated the level of awareness in the community unlike it had before. Back in May of this year, we celebrated for the first time ever an entire month of apraxia awareness, which we used as a great opportunity to share stories and share statistics and really educate a much larger community about apraxia of speech and how it impacts children and the work that we do as an organization to provide support to families across the country and across the world. And then most recently, we just held our national conference in July of this year down in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we brought together 400 parents and professionals to learn about apraxia of speech and to be able to go back to their communities and share that information to help children across the world. So we are now in the beginning of our walk season. We've had a couple of Walk for Apraxia events held thus far, and we are really excited about the upcoming Detroit Walk for Apraxia that will be taking place later this month in August. And Casey can talk a little bit more about what to look forward to with the walk.
So this is the fifth year for the Detroit Area Walk, and I've been the walk coordinator for 3 years. This year we have moved to downtown Detroit. We've previously been in Taylor and Warren, and we're going to be at the District Market, which is inside Little Caesars Arena. We're going to have our registration, silent auction, walk activities. The kids do rock painting. We have a fresh new guru, they call her Nancy Kaufman, bringing some sensory bins for the kids to play in. And it's just a great day of celebration with the family, celebrate all the kids. We do a small ceremony, and each child that is our apraxia star, as we call them, comes up and gets their medal and gets their name announced and gets to be celebrated. And then we go and do our walk around the area. We're going to be walking around Woodward to the new Mike Illich Business School around Wayne State and coming back to the arena. So hopefully we can raise some awareness walking around Woodward.
So for those who aren't as familiar with apraxia as a condition, can you give me an overview of how it affects a person?
Absolutely. So apraxia speech is a motor speech disorder. We don't know the reasons for why a child develops apraxia of speech or is born with apraxia of speech, but it is often 2 or 3 years in when a child isn't meeting certain milestones. Parents often will bring their child for an assessment to understand what's going on. And that may very well be the first time that a parent hears the word apraxia of speech. Our organization works to try and decrease the amount of time that a child would have to wait or a family would have to wait to hear those words and to be able to then have a course of treatment. So early intervention is really key. We want to encourage families if they have a suspicion that their child isn't developing speech similar to their peers, whether it's their sibling or otherwise, we want to encourage them to ask the right questions of their pediatrician, and ultimately be seen by a speech-language pathologist, ideally a speech-language pathologist who has knowledge about apraxia of speech. Because it is a motor planning disorder, speech therapy really is the only way to overcome apraxia. It does require frequent and intensive sessions to help a child learn to form those muscle movements. There are a variety of methodologies that work, and we as an organization, Apraxia Kids, do not necessarily endorse a specific method, but there are individuals, there are professionals out there that have a variety of different techniques, and ultimately we encourage parents and caregivers to find the right technique that works with their child, whether that's a technique that allows, if their child has other comorbidities and challenges that they're experiencing, if they have sensory processing issues, some of the treatment methods that involve touch might not be the right fit for that child. And so as an organization, we work to make sure that there's early intervention information available and that we help families navigate how to get support for their child and then ultimately, connect them with the right therapist that will be able to work with them to help them find their voice, because as an organization, that's our mission. We believe every child deserves a voice, and we work hard to ensure that professionals and families have the tools they need to support children with apraxia.
So, in your time with this organization, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Well, I think Casey can probably talk about her nephew and his personal journey with apraxia and highlight that as a success. We hear successes all the time. We've been around for a number of years, and as I said, children are often diagnosed early, around the age of 2 or 3, and over the years, we have had a multitude of young men and women who have come back to us after having worked hard to find their voice and to overcome that. To be able to then speak at our national conference, or to be, we have a member of our board of directors was a young child with apraxia that now has found her voice and is using it to help advocate and support the organization. But Casey and her nephew Bryce, I think that's a story worth telling.
Yeah, Bryce, my nephew, obviously, he's now 8 years old. Bryce was diagnosed at 3 years old. We noticed he wasn't speaking, and I'm very close to him. I'm a very involved aunt, and my sister and brother-in-law work, so at night I would be the one that would take care of him the first 2 years of his life, and he did a lot of humming and mumbling, and there was just never words, and, we knew something wasn't right. So my sister had taken him to the pediatrician, and they said, just take him to the speech clinic. He might just have a speech delay. And she comes home from the appointment and says he has apraxia. We're all like, what is that? What does that mean? So, of course, we're Googling it. I ended up finding Apraxia Kids. And we, for about a year, he did, some private speech therapy. Unfortunately, most insurances do not cover enough speech therapy or the intensive therapy that apraxia needs, because it does need a different type of intensive therapy than just a regular speech delay does. So that was on and off for a year, and then he started into preschool, and he was offered speech therapy there and doing his private sessions, and he started to be able to say words. It was not a complete sentence or anything like that. And then in 2014, we found that apraxia kids did the walk for apraxia all across the country, and we attended the one that was in Warren, ran by the previous walk coordinator. And the very next year, they, with the walk money, they do iPads for speech for the kids as part of what we raise money for, and Bryce qualified and received one of the iPads, and he would take it to his appointments with him. His speech therapist used it with him at school. Some of the kids do use them as communication devices. Bryce used it to to help him practice with his speech, to mimic and practice his speech, because it does take practice. You know, they have to practice with their movements and stuff like that. And by the time he was 5 years old, started kindergarten, he went to public school, no issues. He was able to form complete sentences. He does still have, like, you can tell it sounds like he has an accent, but he forms complete sentences, talks with kids. You know, he's never been treated any different at school. Luckily, I know some of the kids have issues with being bullied, but I'm very happy with as far as he's come, you know, in that 5 years. But there are kids out there that do struggle still, but Bryce, you know, had the right support system in his life, and we're very thankful for finding Apraxia Kids and learning all this information and being a part of a community to learn about all the resources that are out there. Because some people learn and hear Apraxia and they're like, what is that? They don't know what to do. And some parents, and you know, we're learning that some speech therapists don't even really know what Apraxia is because it's not taught in university. So this year, we are working with Dave Hammer, who works with Apraxia Kids, and he's coming here to do a seminar with the parents and graduate students in the communications disorders program at Wayne State to do a seminar with them and talk more about Apraxia and teach them about it and just bring more awareness to it. And, you know, that way there's more people out there to help the kids and to be able to maybe make a noise enough that maybe one day insurance companies and stuff will figure out that this is something that needs help. And that's just it. It's just helping the kids find their voice.
So you were saying that if families want more information, they can look that up. And can you tell me a little about that?
Absolutely. One of the things that our walks help support are our website, which is free and available to the public. And so any family or any professional that wants more information about apraxia of speech, we encourage you to visit our website at apraxia-kids.org. There you can find information and resources. We have webinars and other opportunities to connect with us as an organization. There's ways to request print materials to have in offices. And we also would love if any of the families or professionals in the greater Detroit area would be interested in joining us at the walk. The walk is being held. Casey, tell the details.
Yeah.
August 25th, registration begins at 10 a.m. We're going to start walking at 12 p.m. at the District Market in Detroit, just inside Little Caesars Arena.
And the walk website is community.apraxia-kids.org/Detroit Walk. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you. I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep.
Of all the forces in the universe never to be underestimated, the support and the love surrounding a person with a disability is definitely among them. For the fact is, for a child affected with apraxia, family support, leading them to the right sources of help and information, is vital. For someone that the medical system underestimates and says, this person's never going to make it, having the right support system, the right belief, the right people standing beside you, makes all the difference. Fact is, what the mind tells a person they can do, they will find a way to do. It's the strength and the unbreakable will of a person with a disability that enables them to do what we might find impossible. A child with apraxia may grow up to be a public speaker. They may change the world. But the fact is, it's up to us to keep an open mind, just not to step on their dreams when they're still growing as seedlings. It's not the right of any of us. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.